Hey guys, welcome to I've Never Said This Before with me, Tommy D'Addario. I am so excited to share this conversation with you with one of the most thoughtful and brilliant humans I have had the pleasure of chatting with. The very talented actor and singer Ben Barnes is hanging out with me today. So on the acting side, Ben has become known as the King of Fantasy. He starred as Prince Caspian in the Chronicles of Narnia franchise. Then he went on to do Dorian Gray, Killing Bono, Westworld, Marvel's The Punisher, and of course, play the fan favorite villain in the wildly popular Netflix series Shadow and Bone. And because his talent can't be contained to just one art form, he is also a brilliant singer and songwriter. His debut album, Where the Light Gets In, is out right now, and let me tell you, his lyrics are magical. He connects to the human spirit in such a way that's gonna leave you feeling seen and heard, and like your voice, your life journey truly matters. That's the magic of Ben Barnes. And he was so kind to invite me to his New York City performance at Webster Hall, where, oh man, the only way I can describe his show is that it was electric. Today we are celebrating all of the things that come together to make Ben Barnes who he truly is, the man behind some of your favorite roles, and the man behind the music. So, let's see if today we can get Ben to say something that he has never said before. Ben Barnes, how you doing, my man?
I'm very well, thank you for having me.
I am so happy to have you here. Welcome to New York. I know you've been on a whirlwind tour. You don't even probably know what city you're in right now.
Yeah, I definitely have almost gone on stage and done that Spinal Tap reference of, hello, Cleveland. We've never been anywhere near Cleveland. But it's been really, really fun.
Well,
really magical.
Congratulations to you. We have so much to get into. I was listening to your album the other day and it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm a sucker for drama and soulful lyrics and real connection in music. And I'm probably one of the rare people who can listen to that type of music in the gym when I'm working out. Like, I don't need like a banger. I don't need like the beats. Like, I like to envision what I'm listening to and create the story as I'm working out. And
you
your
like
album's very much that.
You like something kind of filmic in
I
the
do.
Way that it's
I do.
Put together.
I really do. And I think what you did with that is brilliant, and we're going to dive into it. But I find your story so fascinating. So at 19-ish, you began writing music, right? And kind of started working with producers or your teen years?
I had a very short foray into music when I was 19. I was signed to Simon Fuller, who had created the Spice Girls.
Yes.
And
We
were working I mention it only because it kind of provides balance to the story, which is that it only lasted a few weeks. And I was recording kind of like jazz standards. I think he thought it might be an interesting idea to have a teenager singing kind of like Rat Pack music, essentially. And there was sort of lots of big ideas for it, but then it just very quickly kind of fell by the wayside, as I came to understand a lot of those projects do. And over the last 20 years of working in entertainment, I now fully understand how things come and go and they fall apart. But at the time, when you're 19 and aspirational, and every next step you take you think is going to be the step which takes you up the golden escalator to, you know, the place that you've dreamed of, I think it was more difficult to accept. I think you get better at enduring rejection and enduring not every moment being the moment as you get on in this career, because it's not a smooth ride for anybody.
Right. And then you kind of transitioned and had this amazing career and continue to have an amazing career in the acting world, becoming a king of fantasy in that genre, right? And really doing it for over 2 decades. And then suddenly now you're in this beautiful era with your music. So what made you say, okay, you know what? It's time for my music. Like, I need to go revisit that at this point in my career.
I think it was a combination of a couple of things. I think initially I found that being on different films and TV shows, I was getting itchy to have a little bit more control and a little bit more say and invest a little bit more of myself in the scripts and in the characters that I was working on. But there has to be an acceptance when you're an actor that somebody else has written this script, somebody else is producing, somebody else is designing the costume, somebody else is directing, and their vision might not be exactly aligned with yours for any particular project. And so I think you can go to the writers, you know, as often as you want and say, I don't think I would say this line exactly this way. And you could switch three words around, but actually it's not garnering any kind of real control. And I think for a lot of creative people, releasing control of a creative project whilst you're in the midst of it is a very difficult thing. And I think I was yearning to inject something of myself and to sew something of myself into a lot of these characters. But then, you know, the last, particularly the last 6 or 7 years, I've been playing a lot of psychopaths and murderers and liars. and there wasn't very much room for negotiating myself into these characters. And so I think part of it was realizing that if you have something to say in the world, or you want to share something of yourself in the world, or you want to kind of offer up something into the like creative universe, that you have to start with a blank piece of paper and it has to be on your terms. But that means that it's entirely on your shoulders as well. And anything that kind of comes of it that feels successful will be, you know, there's, you don't have to credit anybody else, but equally, if it doesn't kind of go the way that you'd hoped, it's nobody's fault but your own. And so I think it's harder to kind of take up that mantle of the blank piece of paper is historically scary.
Yeah.
So I think that was the first thing. And the second thing was really, I think, when the pandemic struck and people were given, you know, everyone was given two things, a lot of extra time to muse and to think on what their dreams and goals and aspirations might be for the rest of their life, given the opportunity. And I think that second bit was like important, that everyone was kind of faced with the mortality of themselves and the people that they care about. And there's an insistence that you reprioritize. And for me, that meant going back 20 years to the thing that I really wanted to spend a lot of time doing, and the thing I'd all through high school put all of my energy into, which was singing and making music and making music with groups and bands of other people, and coming back to that. And I think I'd just been a very private person through my acting career. I didn't like sharing a lot in interviews. I didn't like giving up like what I deemed to be sort of sacred parts of my own life. It was, you hide behind a character and you pretend to be that. But I actually released some of that, I think, during my 30s, and actually doing the music was the final piece of that puzzle, to really realize that there wasn't anything to be afraid of. People's judgment is not something to fear, because they're going to do it regardless of what you do, spend your time doing. So I think I projected forward to the 80-year-old version of myself at the beginning of the pandemic and thought, will that man be proud of the way I've lived my life and the way I've done this? And one of the answers was the fact that you love music so much and you enjoy doing it so much and you feel like you have at least some skill in this area and have the opportunity to, and you didn't do it for fear of judgment, that would not make me proud. So that was like a big motivator as well.
So would you say when you were ready to release your music and put it out into the world, even though you had been known predominantly as an actor, were you able to push through that anxiety knowing that this would make you happy in the future, looking at your future self? Or did you still have some anxiety saying, okay, I'm about to put this all out there?
It was in steps. It was incremental. Yeah. I think there was more than one aspect to it. I was afraid that people would dig into the songs and the lyrics and try and kind of insinuate things about my life. Also, I was afraid that people wouldn't necessarily take me as seriously as an actor if I was also trying to do this thing. I mean, we grew up, you know, I think in the era of watching like a lot of massive pop stars try their hand at acting in movies and stuff, to usually pretty disastrous effect. And I remember feeling judgment of that, thinking stay in your lane. Like, you're like a world superstar at doing this, why are you pretending that just anyone can be an actor just because they can read? And I think I had concern that people might feel the same the other way around, but they also might judge the kind of music that I wanted to put out, because you don't really know what kind of music you put out, I think, unless you're sort of plagiarizing something. You don't really know what kind of music you put out, you're going to put out until you finished it,
right?
Because with my music, for example, I'm obsessed with kind of 1970s music, soul, Motown, a lot of those kind of like rock bands from that era. And I think all of those things that I've listened to have kind of infused everything that I want to make. But it's all passed through the filter of my experience, and it's passed through my vocal cords, and it's passed through the fingers of the people playing on the album and everything that they've ever listened to. And so yeah. It becomes this completely different and new thing, no matter how hard you try to make it sound like something that you love. And so I think I had fear that I wouldn't maybe even like what I ended up making. Mm. And then where would I be? And also I knew that if I put on a show, even if I put it on in a place where there was only 100 people, there would be 100 phones filming it, and right. It would end up online, and right. Millions of people would see it. So yeah. I think there was, I definitely put pressure on myself, but that's something that I've spent the last few years trying to work on doing differently anyway, to release myself of that pressure and that judgment, because in the end, we're all floating through space on a rock. So what does it really matter? Mm. But I think, I am someone to whom everything has always mattered pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, what I love is that you did it. You didn't let that dissuade you and say, you know what? I'm just going to keep acting and stay in that lane. And you followed through. And I know you had an EP of about 5 songs a few years ago, and this is your debut album. And you followed through and you did it. And I'm very interested with humanity and with people. When you reach a certain point in your life, I just turned 39, and people think that, you hear 40 and it's like, oh no, you can't do something new, or you can't do something you're not known for. And yes, I'm a host, I'm an interviewer, but there are other things outside of this that I'm trying to do and get made and happen that is not related to this. And so many people would look at that and say, well, good luck, bro. Like, you're going to be 40 next year. You think you can just do something in a totally different world than the one you're known for? And it's like, fuck yeah, you can. Like, yes, you can. And why not go for it? And I like that you have that mentality too. You're like, granted, you have a background, but you didn't say to the point you just made, nope, I'm not going to do it because the world might not want it, or I have success in one lane. Like, you're doing it.
How do you feel about 40 outside of professional endeavor? Like,
I think it's young. Like, for me, I think age is such an interesting person, because I'm at the age now where I'll be sitting across from somebody and my age will come up and they'll be like, you're 39? No. I'm like, well, you saying that implies that that's like some ancient age. Like, yeah, I know that you mean well, and I don't take it personally, but it's just such a funny concept to me, because, it's just the implication of that. And probably when I was 28, I thought that too, So
I remember being 39 and having this kind of like cold dread of 40 hitting. And then I remember about 2 days after my 40th birthday, I had an audition, and I walked into a room and the casting director sort of chatted to me for a minute, and then she looked down at my resume or whatever she was holding, and she was like, oh, you're 40.
Mm.
Right. And this sort of smile crept across my face, because I realized that the character that I was going in for was like a really interesting character, and you could tell there was a sort of a level of, I don't know if quite respect is quite the right word, but a level of appreciation of lived experience that maybe I might have it in me too.
Yeah.
Be this. And then after that moment, I sort of never look back about the aging. And every night on stage, I have a song called Someday on the album about sort of not allowing people to hold you back from your dreams. But it's a really sort of head noddy, dancey kind of song. And I play it last on tour. And I talk about, I talked to the audience saying, if you take one thing away from this show, don't let people stand in the way of spending your precious time on this planet doing the things that you love to do, whatever those are. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can stand up here at 43 and sort of be near the beginning of a pop, soulful pop music career, then you too can get out and do whatever the thing is that you've been dreaming about doing. And it doesn't have to be on some grand scale.
Mm-mm.
And it's interesting how that was clearly not something I set out to do, to make people feel like they could have space or opportunity or permission to go and do creative things or physical things or intellectual things that they have put off doing. But in response to the EP that I put out, I think I do tend to write songs that are essentially about hope. I think all great art in terms of like films, TV shows, whatever, is essentially when you distill them down, they're really about hopefulness.
Yeah.
But I find it very difficult not to write about that thematically. And I think that one of the upshots of putting out the EP, which I really hadn't seen, was lots of people saying, this song made me want to go and do this.
Mm.
And then you realize once you put music out into the world, it immediately becomes not about you.
Mm.
And people always used to say that to me about films. And I've said in interviews many years ago that I think, you know, a film is basically just a collection of scenes edited together until someone who has had nothing to do with the film watches it. And then it becomes a film, because then there's an organic and true reaction to what someone has made.
Mm.
Then it's really a film when you've given it over to someone else. But I didn't really think about it with music until I was putting it out. But I think it's even more true and strong when it comes to a song, because if you think of all the songs that you've ever loved,
mm-hmm.
you're not thinking about the experience of the singer, you're not thinking about the experience of the songwriter, you're thinking about how that music affects you, how it connects to you, how it relates to your life. You know, when I try to think of a different example, when I talk about this, because I've had this conversation with bandmates and friends and people I've written songs with, but you know, if you listen to Prince sing I Just Want Your Extra Time and Your Kiss, you're not thinking, whose extra time does Prince want? You're thinking, whose extra time do I want?
Right.
Who comes into my mind when I listen to this song? And I think it's so immediate when you're singing songs, particularly when you're singing live for someone, and the reaction is so immediate. They're looking up at you and they're having their own experience that is not yours. And I have to remind myself, I get very nervous before shows, because it feels like when you've got 1,000, 2,000 people watching you sing songs that you wrote alone in a room, it feels quite raw. But then I remind myself what it feels like to go to a concert.
Yeah.
And how I have no judgment or expectation of what's about to happen on a mm-hmm. stage. I just think, oh, I hope it's good. And then I'm in my own emotional experience of listening to a song. You know, I've definitely like cried at concerts before where I'm in my own head about my own stuff.
Yeah.
But there's something about the chord progression or a particular lyric that's like struck me.
Mm-hmm.
It's got nothing to do with the person who's delivering it.
Y'all want coffee?
Yeah, an extra hot almond milk mocha latte-chino?
We got it black or with milk and sugar.
Oh.
If only everything was as customizable as the TD Cash credit card. It lets you choose how you earn points to help you earn more cashback rewards. It's the mocha latte-chino of credit cards. Learn more at td.com/cashcard. TD Bank, unexpectedly human. Restrictions apply. See terms and conditions on tdbank.com or visit a TD Bank store for details regarding the rewards program, rates, fees, and other important information. Credit approval required. Offered by TD Bank NA.
What's up? It's Gary Jones. How about we take you on a global tour right from your kitchen? No passport needed. Transport your taste with Sabra's new chimichurri and falafel-style hummus flavors. Chimichurri hummus is a zesty Argentinian-inspired twist on creamy hummus. And falafel-style hummus has the bold flavors of a stacked falafel platter blended into Mediterranean perfection. Sabra, you did it again. I'm getting hungry. Be sure to pick up these irresistible new Sabra hummus flavors at your local retailer. Sabra, America's number one hummus brand.
It is the word of God and the work of God that changes people's lives. The In Touch Radio Network on iHeartRadio features the Bible-based teachings of Dr. Charles Stanley, God's Word presented in a way to help you grow closer to the Lord each day. Whether you're listening to Charles Stanley Radio or daily devotions, In Touch Radio Network has the faith-based content you can trust. Just search for the In Touch Ministries channel on the iHeartRadio app or visit intouch.org.
Florida just got its own local currency, the Florida Goldback, and you can get one for free. Goldbacks look like cash, but they're made of pure 24-karat gold, so they resist inflation and preserve your purchasing power. To celebrate the launch of this local currency, we're giving away free half goldbacks to Florida residents only while supplies last. Claim your free Florida Goldback before they're gone at freegoldback.com and get it delivered to your Florida address absolutely free.
Like I said earlier, this album, man, I mean, it's just the lyrically, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
It's just beautiful. It's your debut album.
I mean, so much for you to say that in particular, because I don't let anyone else write, obviously, lyrics. I do get music. I did get music support on the album, because I'd written all the songs myself for the EP, and musically I think it's a really good thing to kind of collaborate, but songs feel like babies, and if you let someone else sort of mess with the lyrics, it feels like it's maybe not yours anymore. I know a lot of people don't feel that way, but for me, words have always been my main tool, and I think for all the things I was afraid of in putting out something new creatively, there was also rewards to be found along the way in terms of finding things that you're... I think it's hard to learn new things in your 30s and 40s, but to find those little things that you are sort of organically good at that you didn't necessarily know you were was like a real, really unexpected reward of this kind of process. And I would find that I would write songs with people and they would help me so much, and they would understand things that I never have a hope of understanding in terms of music itself. But then afterwards, they might say, that was great. Can you help me with the lyrics for this song that I'm writing? And, I realize I have a facility with that, and like a real passion for like finding little lyrical hooks for songs that sound like phrases or idioms or sayings or whatever, but are actually fresh and new to you. And it's something that I've discovered that I really, really love to do.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the messages and the lyrics on this album, you speak about so much. I love the title of the album, too. I think it's so fantastic and just poetic and very on theme with you know, what you write in the collection you put together. Where the Light Gets In, of course, is the name for everybody listening. You talk about everything from anxiety to letting go to, being loved and the right to be loved and be loved, as you say. And there's just so much you cover in such a collection of music. So for you, what was the main thing you were hoping to achieve with this album collectively?
I think I wanted it to feel honest and authentic to my lived experience. And I think that goes all the way from very exciting kind of fizzy feelings that you have when you first meet someone in a romantic way, all the way through to like considering the mortality of your parents and trying to wrestle with the idea of them not being around at some point, through to, you know, kind of nostalgically looking back at friendships that have been fallen by the wayside and you're not quite sure why, or regretting that you didn't love someone in a certain kind of way, or wishing you could have loved them differently. All these different kinds of things that make us who we are, and all those decisions that you have made in your life that have led you to where you are. And kind of like, I think it was aligned very much with where I was in my life a few years ago, trying to just sort of accept all those things and realize that every decision you've ever made has brought you to where you are. And if you don't regret where you are, you shouldn't regret those decisions. And I think that once I'd written that song, Where the Light Gets In, which I wrote, that's the only song I wrote with two of the band members of Maroon 5, because I had this little hook lyrically already, but I didn't have an idea of what it sounded like. I had some other songs in my head that had the warmth that I wanted that song to have, but I didn't know where to go with it. And they very graciously agreed to help me write that one song. And once I'd written it, I knew it had to be the title of the album. But then it started me thinking about the Japanese art of kintsugi, where if you break something, if something ceramic breaks, you fix it using gold. I'm sure you've seen those like cracked gold ceramics before. That notion, that concept that something could break and then you could fix it and make it more precious than it was before you broke it. I think that's just every person I know over the age of 20. It's the story is that you go through things and you make choices and things happen to you, and you can either let those weigh you down or you can fight through to a point where those things actually make you make you who you are, not necessarily harder or stronger, but just who you are. And sometimes strong is about acceptance rather than fight.
Mm. Mm. Sometimes strong is about acceptance rather than fight.
This is what happens. See, I just said that and I haven't said that before. And now like, I feel like I want to write it in my phone in case it
get
wants
him
to be
a notepad and a pen. Somebody write that down.
That's a really good example of how my songs start, by the way. Like it's usually just chatting with friends or other users or whatever. And
yeah.
Someone, something, either I say something or someone else says something, three words, and you're like, wait. But see, you've just shown me that you could be a lyricist because your eyes went up and left and you went, wait.
Yeah, no,
the
it
way that you listen is like so, is like such a huge part of being able to make things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I heard immediately cool. that resonates with me. That's pretty cool. That's going to be something. Mark my words.
Oh yeah. Cool.
There's so many songs I love on this. I particularly love Slow It Down. Oh. I think as a little bit of a hopeless romantic, I connected with that
I was
one.
About to say, you know, such,
that yes.
You can tell what kind of a person someone is by which almost, I should do like a quiz thing online, you know, like yeah. one of those like personality quizzes.
Right.
You listen to the songs and then you pick your favorite. It tells you what kind of person you are because if Slow It Down is your favorite song on the record, you are definitely a hopeless romantic because it's the only like pure
oh,
love
so
song.
Good.
It's the only song with no tension in it.
Well, you must be too if you're writing that song, no?
Well, that's true, but I also wrote all the other ones. So.
Oh, right. True, fair enough.
But yeah, absolutely, no. Yeah, definitively, from when I was a kid, any sort of really romantic kind of films, novels, poems, I've always definitely kind of gravitated towards that. And yeah, Slow It Down is the only
like put it on
pure song.
For everybody listening, put it on for your partner. You will win brownie points for the next 6 months.
I was at a show the other day and I do a thing in the show where I say a quote from a film and try to get people to guess what film it's from.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it?
Oh my God. Oh God.
You'll know,
I'm so
you'll
bad
know.
At trivia,
you'll
but give
know,
me one. Okay,
know,
fine, fine, fine. Do not judge me if I don't know.
No, I won't.
And I need help from my friend
I
in the corner.
You
Celia,
won't.
Get ready.
You can
okay.
have help. You can have help.
Okay, all right.
When I'm about to play that song, I get someone from the audience to tell me what movie the following quote is from. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to look around once in a while, you might miss it.
Oh my God. I should know this. It sounds so familiar. Life moves pretty fast. If you give me the decade it's from.
It's from the 80s.
From the 80s.
And it is.
It's not The Breakfast Club. No.
You're very close.
Yeah.
It's got some of the same actors.
It's. I feel like it's that. Oh my God. It's not 16 Candles.
No.
Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
Did you look that up online?
No, actually, I knew that was Ferris Bueller because I watched that recently.
Oh my God.
It's Ferris Bueller.
Okay.
And that. I had all these scratchings from different, like, honestly, like a couple of lines from a birthday card I wrote someone, a couple of lines from like a poem I was sort of muddling with that I never really did anything with. All these different kind of like, I had like a list of things that made it into the lyrics of those songs.
Mm.
I think I'd written like, share your baby names with me, stand at family graves with me, and I'd written like that as a little couplet of like, you know, the most romantic thing you can do, and then the most kind of, you know, the two things, the two different ends of the spectrum of like what you would want a partner to be there for you with, be there with you for. I've been sleeping on a bus, and and then I couldn't find the hook for the song, and then we watched Fresh Bueller's Day Off and Life Moves Pretty Fast was just those words. I was like, oh, that's what it is. So I just kind of borrowed those few words and then Life Moves Pretty Fast with you. I think I finally found someone to slow it down.
I think you're making everybody listening to this episode swoon with these lyrics.
Well, it's just such as I like.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful.
I like songs that are like feel really specific, and I think
yeah.
that's such a specific feeling. It's not like I hope I find someone with whom I fall, you know, head over heels in love and feel fireworks, it's a very specific thing. I hope I'm, you know, I hope I find someone, and I hope I'm in a position to appreciate that. When I meet someone with whom time feels just that bit slower,
because
life just races past you, to realize that that is like equally important, if not more, than someone with whom, you know, it feels like there's fireworks all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a stunning song. Every song is stunning for a different reason. I know you have a video dropping very soon for 1 minute More.
Oh, yes.
Which Valentine's I got Day. To see early.
You
and
did.
It was beautiful.
Oh,
so
you.
This song is an interesting one. It's coming out on Valentine's Day, the video,
yes.
Correct? And that one is, I referenced earlier, about letting go a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me about that one.
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes you start writing a song about one thing and then it sort of feels like it starts to be about something else, but you kind of keep it a secret.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, it's a sort of deeply romantic song on one level about being very in love with someone and them not being in a position or having the tools to love you back how you need to be loved. And so you both know on some level that you have to say goodbye to it. And maybe you've already had the conversation, but you just haven't quite decided to say goodbye yet.
Mm.
And you're dragging your feet essentially, because you know there's been something wonderful about it. So on the surface, it was about that. But then as I started kind of toying with it more, I was thinking about it from other perspectives about how all the different relationships in my life, I think being quite transient as an actor as well, sometimes, you know, you work with people very intently for months on end, and then the months go by really quickly. And like even being on this tour right now, you know,
yeah.
We're almost finished with the American leg of the tour. And I'm so grateful that we have the Europe leg of the tour coming, because if you told me that it was the very last show tomorrow, then I would be distraught, because it's felt such precious time. And I just like just one more show, just one more moment together doing this thing, because it feels precious. And then I sort of extrapolated it further to like, you know, honestly, I was thinking, you know, my mum has been navigating cancer for a decade. And she's like an extraordinary human being. But there are times when we were kind of told that, you know, some of the treatments she was having were going to be difficult, and there was maybe some hard conversations to have in advance of having those surgeries or those treatments. And, you know, I remember kind of like wailing to the sky, just please one, you know, just one more day, one more year, one more, you know. And I think, you know, this is when I started to realize that those kind of songs will mean something different to every mm-hmm. person who kind of listens to it. And you ask me what my hope is for the songs. I hope that no one cares what they're about for me. I hope that they start to have meaning for someone else. It doesn't have to be important meaning. It could just be a nice moment of like, oh, my, you know, partner and I listened to Slow It Down and we felt really cozy and that was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could be like people come up to you at shows and you realize they've been listening to a song from your EP for years as their kind of like happy song or whatever it might be. And, you know, it doesn't have to be on a Taylor Swift level. It doesn't have to be millions of people in the world doing it. It can be 300 people. It could be 7 people,
mm-hmm.
You know. And I'm very fortunate that because I've done what I've done as an actor for the last 20 years, that there are people who will show up for me and people support me. And then hopefully when they do that, there's reward in it for them.
Well, they're also showing up for you because you put out material that resonates. If you put out garbage, they wouldn't be showing
up. True. That's true.
You know, to be fair.
So that's actually the best answer to that question, which I am going to steal and use in other interviews. But like my hope is that it resonates is a really good word, is that it resonates with people and just they keep a piece of it like, with them as well.
You know, Ben, I have to say, it's hard to imagine you at a point of your life where you weren't this open and just kind of vulnerable, because I know
well,
you said...
Well, I was with my, you know, I was raised by, you know, my extraordinary mum that I talk about is a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
Extraordinary, my dad's a psychiatrist. I was very open with them.
But I'm sure when you hit the spotlight and you got really big in Hollywood as an actor, and suddenly this exposure happened where everybody wants to know something about you and is interested in your life, and the spotlight is on you. I imagine that was a bit weird at first.
That was weird, but I think it also started, if I'm really honest, I think it started before that as well. And like in school, I didn't really have a lot of friends at school, and I didn't really enjoy school very much. And I felt like if you shared things and were open in that kind of environment, it wasn't something that was valued, and it was certainly, it just like can be weaponized. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was very open with my family and with my friends that I was really close to, and I've always been very open and vulnerable with them. But I think I kind of took that sort of like school life into when I first started doing films and stuff. And, you know, I grew up in the UK, and the tabloid press there is like can be pretty acute. Mm-hmm. And they started asking questions in the first few interviews I ever had. And I thought, what are you asking me this for?
Like what would be an example of a question?
Well, I don't know. Just like...
just intrusive.
Yeah, just like started with questions about maybe, what your parents do for a living, or asking about who you're dating or how long you've been together or whatever those things are. And it was just like, it just felt like crazy intrusive to ask that stuff before you ask about the film you've just made or something.
Right.
And it wasn't, you know, of course I realize it can be far worse than that. I know it can be devastating. But it just shored up the walls of privacy and thought, a lot of the actors I really admire, you don't really know much about them. There's an element of mystery to them. And I just sort of made this decision that, like, I guess I just won't necessarily share that much. But I realized this is now completely on my terms.
Yes.
And
you have the power.
This is the stuff that I am choosing to share, and you can choose to read it however you want, or make it about you, or whatever it is. But I'm still not, you know, I'm still not necessarily sharing like details of how I live my life when I'm not working or making something.
Right.
But I do feel now that there is nothing. I used to be anxious that people might ask me certain things or whatever. And now I'm not afraid of any question. And actually doing music, releasing music, playing music for people in particular was one of the really big catalysts for feeling that way and letting go after, you know, almost 40 years of that kind of fear of judgment. And it's made its way into my acting too. Like going back on sets and things, I feel less afraid of whether people will accept a certain character or what if they don't, you know, like the show, or what, you know, just wrestling with those things. And I think because some of it has been useful and motivating, some of that self-critical thinking has been motivating. But I think in the end, understanding that it's been more detrimental than motivating was an important thing to for me to get to.
Y'all want coffee?
Yeah, an extra hot almond milk mocha latte-chino?
We got it black or with milk and sugar.
Oh.
If only everything was as customizable as the TD Cash credit card. It lets you choose how you earn points to help you earn more cashback rewards. It's the mocha latte-chino of credit cards. Learn more at td.com/cashcard. TD Bank, unexpectedly human. Restrictions apply. See terms and conditions on tdbank.com or visit a TD Bank store for details regarding the rewards program, rates, fees, and other important information. Credit approval required. Offered by TD Bank N.A.
What's up? It's Gary Jones. How about we take you on a global tour right from your kitchen? No passport needed. Transport your taste with Sabra's new chimichurri and falafel-style hummus flavors. Chimichurri hummus is a zesty Argentinian-inspired twist on creamy hummus. And falafel-style hummus has the bold flavors of a stacked falafel platter blended into Mediterranean perfection. Sabra, you did it again. I'm getting hungry. Be sure to pick up these irresistible new Sabra hummus flavors at your local retailer. Sabra, America's number one hummus brand.
We call it discipleship. Christ-centered, Bible-based principles to help you in your everyday life. Listen to the teachings of Dr. Charles Stanley, God's Word presented clearly on the InTouch Radio Network on iHeartRadio. Whether you're listening to Charles Stanley Radio or daily devotions, InTouch Radio Network has the faith-based content you can trust. Just search for the InTouch Ministries channel on the iHeartRadio app or visit intouch.org.
Have you heard about Goldbacks? They're a local gold currency that can be used right here in Florida. Goldbacks are real 24-karat gold that you can hold right in your hand. They look like cash, but they don't inflate like cash. And here's the best part. We're giving them away absolutely free. Residents can claim their free half goldback by visiting freegoldback.com and getting it shipped right to your home. It's real gold, it's really free, and it's yours. Claim one today at freegoldback.com before they're gone.
Blown away by what you've done musically. I've got to ask you an acting question on behalf of all the fans.
Please.
When I announced you as my guest, I got a lot of people writing in about one particular thing. I wonder if you know what I'm going to ask you.
It's one of three things. It's either will there be a third season of Shadow and Bone? Because I think the people who love fantasy stuff really love fantasy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I often get, would there be another life for the Billy Russo character that I played on the Punisher Marvel show? Because John Bernthal, who played the Punisher in that, is playing that character again on the Daredevil show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely one of the characters that I loved playing the most. And
really?
It's just interesting that different kinds of people obviously respond to that. You know, Marvel and The Punisher has different fans from Narnia, you know, it's no surprise. But and then the third one is the third thing it's likely to be about, especially if it was on the internet, is like Harry Potter fan casting.
You nailed it.
So it's the third one.
Yeah. Third one,
which is, it's wild to me because the amount of Harry Potter books or that I've been asked to sign, or, you know, Gryffindor ties that I've been given. And every time I kind of feel the need to say, you know, I'm not in this. Right. I did an interview. I did like a morning show in LA few months ago for the music, and we were about to play a song, and she was like, loved you in Harry Potter.
No,
and I was like,
stop.
Sorry, going to stop you there.
No.
Wasn't in Harry Potter, just to be very clear. But I think it's a fan casting that's been going on for literally decades.
It must feel good knowing that the fans want that to happen.
Well, I think it started off as something that I've come to understand after, because it's been around for so many years, that they wanted to do a kind of Marauders prequel to Harry Potter, and they had an idea of like three or four actors they wanted in their heads. I think Andrew Garfield and Aaron Taylor Johnson and myself, they had the idea that those would be the actors to play those characters young, but now we're all the same age that those characters were in the original movies. So yeah, it's sort of 20 years too late for their original plan. But I know they're making a new TV show version of those stories. So I've just always been a fan. I read the books and listen to Stephen Fry read them on tape sometimes
so good,
to help me go to sleep. But it's something that you know, if the opportunity arose, I think there are some really wonderful characters in those stories. But you know, they've also been told so beautifully already, you know, on film, on audiobook already, so you know, who knows?
Yeah, you never know what can happen. You never know. Strange.
I'm not against it. I mostly read fantasy.
Yeah.
If I'm reading for pleasure, not scripts. And not kind of like, you know, some kind of like worthy adaptation.
Yeah.
I often read fantasy as well. So I'm just like a fan, which is sort of a good thing really, because I think a lot of my support network online and at concerts and people who go to see my movies are also kind of like fantasy book readers. So
if you could develop any fantasy book into a project, a series, a film, what would you pick?
There was not necessarily for myself, but I remember reading I would like to see a film of this book called The Name of the Wind. It's a Patrick Rothfuss story, and I just think it's a really, really cool, well-told story. The first book's about like a young man who finds himself in this kind of like he kind of works his way through very, very, very tough times to find himself in a kind of alchemist's school, but it's a sort of a slightly harder edged version of one of those stories, and it flashes forward to that character as a grown man who's like keeping his past like a secret. And okay, it's just
so,
really well.
So you, we'll add you in. Well, that. Yeah. Yeah, like nice try saying I don't need to be in it, but no,
I would just like to see it. Honestly, that character just sort of sits behind a bar wistfully for the entire first book. So I would like to see it for sure.
Let's see if that happens. And to be fair, also the Shadow and Bone, if there will be another season, did come up quite a bit as well. So I'm not surprised you hear
my character's dead. So
stranger things have happened.
That's true.
Stranger things have happened, my man.
And it wouldn't be the first time I've come back from the dead.
There we go. Ben, I could talk to you for 4 more hours. I mean, what a pleasure this has been. But as we wrap up, the name of the show is called I've Never Said This Before.
Oh, yes. I completely forgot about that. That part of it.
Yes, yes. So I end every episode with asking my guests that question of what is one thing you've never said before? And that was kind of born, you know, from I work a lot of red carpets. I work a lot of junkets. You're no stranger to them. 3 minutes, 6 minutes, if you're lucky, you get with somebody to have a conversation. And it's very hard to have a real conversation in that environment. It's mainly sound bites about the project.
That was the kind of birth of that.
Yeah, I saw people longing to want to talk about more and not having time to do it. And it was just like a little look in their eyes, or they would start telling a story and then get cut off and we have to go. And so I said, you know what? I want a show where people can come on and we can talk for more than 6 minutes, but also end the conversation with that question. And whatever that means to you, I'm wondering if there is something you've never said before that you want to say today.
Well, I was thinking about it a little bit over the last few days. And we, as I kind of expected, having listened to your show, we kind of almost touched on it already, which was this idea of the sort of very self-critical voice in your head, which can be extremely motivating, but is also, at the end of the day, I think quite a poisonous thing. And I've been kind of grateful for it through my 20s in terms of it fueling my ambition. But I think I've never really talked like publicly about feeling that voice and that part of myself kind of started winning a little bit through my 30s. And instead of kind of becoming more confident with things and more free, and not only as an actor or a creative person, but also just like in my life, I think it got a bit of a like a stranglehold on me, and sort of that was something to kind of be negotiated. And I think like trying to focus on the things that you are good at and the things that you are like proud of yourself for becomes harder and harder with a kind of a voice screaming at you in a way that if a stranger talked to you in that way, either no longer speak to them or punch them in the face.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that I listened to a few things, interviews with other people and read different books about things, but the idea of like talking to yourself as gently as you would advise your own daughter or your own best friend. And I think realizing that one of the things, I might not necessarily be my own favorite actor, or I might not be, you know, I'm not even the best singer in my own band. Those things are just, you can accept some of those things as true without being really critical of yourself. But I think I am really good at surrounding myself with kind, talented, loving, you know, human beings. Mm-hmm. And bringing people together in that kind of a way as well, I think is something that I have been really proud of. And like being a good friend to people is something that I realized I think I am. And so practicing like being a better friend to myself is my thing I haven't said out loud before that I like is something that I have to like practice. And very recently, as in less, you know, as in a month ish ago, I've started like, if I'm feeling like, you know, because taking on, you know, I think with like the fires in LA, which were very close to my home, and like mounting this entire tour, and you know, I know everyone is always juggling a billion things, but it started making me feel like very panicky in a moment where I should have been very excited about starting a tour. And I started at the suggestion of someone that I love, so, you know, suggested writing to yourself, like, as a, like, if you feel panicky, start, you know, write to yourself as if you were your own, like, best friend. What would you say to yourself in that moment? And I was, you know, part of me balks at things like that. I think being raised by therapists and stuff, I'm like, any kind of like tool always feels like a bit icky and a bit like, because I feel like if I start to address things that I feel are a problem for me, then there's something wrong with me, and then I have to accept that and, you know, right, whatever. But actually, I've been finding it very, very useful. But
well, and it helps that self-talk, right? Like, right, you were very critical of yourself. Your self-talk wasn't great. So doing that forces you to flip the script, literally flip the script, and address yourself in a way that you would speak to anybody else.
Goes as, back to that,
you know,
the blank page. And, yeah. And I think that it can be that blank page. You can put on that blank page whatever you choose to put on it. And the thing that I haven't, like, said probably before is just, like, just how terrible I have the capacity to be to myself, but like learning to negotiate that, and like very much like it's very much like a present thing that I'm doing, but
a work in progress.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people are in that same boat. So you know, it might be kind of interesting to hear from someone who, you know, you might make certain presumptions about what their life might be like, but you never quite know how the cogs in someone's head work.
Mm, that's certainly true. I really appreciate you sharing that. I think a lot of people, to your point, look at somebody and perhaps think they seemingly float through life with no worries or stress or, you know, or problems with themselves, and that's just not true. And I think that's a really important point to make, especially as the social media side of the world we live in only gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and people portray one thing online, but you don't know what the truth is behind that. And I think for you to say, like, listen, man, sometimes I really am terrible to myself, and I'm working on it, and I'm not fully there yet.
Well, the only part of certainly an actor, and I think it's just that people see, you see the polished and edited version in a movie, and then you see on stage, you see the part that you've been literally building up to all day and doing sound checks and warm-ups and rehearsing and then even just like emotional preparation through the day of like, oh, okay, it's like, you know, you got to get through the nerves and you got to build up to the thing and you got to try to be your most confident and relaxed, and that's the version that you're presented with. And just remembering that we're all made of the same stuff and we all kind of work in similar ways, I think is like important to acknowledge. And obviously people do it all the time, but that was one of my small ones.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. I know I got to get you out of here. You're a rock star on tour. You have a lot going on. So I'm going to make this really quick. My last question.
Okay.
Do you feel like, with that all being said, you are worthy?
I suppose I'm not quite sure what that means. Worthy of... So worthy of what?
Worthy of being here, worthy of the success you've had, worthy of what you've built.
I suppose if this feels like a really like honest kind of conversation. I suppose if I'm being honest, not really. Because there are so many people in the world doing so many things. We were just discussing today about visiting all these different cities, and we go there for half a day or a day, and you might go and get a coffee from somewhere and someone is like really nice or kind to you in a particular coffee shop, and you're like, oh, and they're here all the time being this way, and we're just sort of like passing through. I actually called my setting up like a production company, I called it Sonder. I don't know if familiar with that word, but it was a relatively new word in the dictionary, meaning that feeling that you get when you pass by strangers, that their life is just as full and dense and intricate as yours. They have their dreams, they have their fears, they have the things that they love about themselves, the things that they hate about themselves. Everyone's life is just as full and rich and meaningful as anyone else's. And I think that I have reached a place where I'm really like grateful and really, grateful, I think is a really good word that probably is, that I'm really grateful for like the kind of life that I have and to be able to do things that I really am passionate about and love to do most of the time. And that makes me feel incredibly lucky. But I'm also very aware of how many people I know that are just as talented, if not more talented, and just as worthy of having that kind of experience, and don't get to have it as often or at all, or don't have the opportunity to have it. And so it's very difficult for me to say, like, I deserve it in any way doesn't sit quite right with me. But I don't feel like I don't, because I believe that I am someone who works hard, someone who's worked hard to be better at the things that they do, someone who has some innate skill sets, and first and foremost, like, someone who believes themselves to be a good man, and therefore, I am where I am, and I'm very grateful and happy about it. But worthy, don't know.
It's an interesting word, but I think you answer that beautifully. Okay. And for what it's worth, I think you are very worthy.
Thank you.
I so enjoy this conversation, Ben. Like I said, your music is sensational. Everybody goes and listens to your album on repeat. Tell everybody more time the name, how to listen, all of it.
The album is called Where the Light Gets In, and you can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere that you listen to music. I appreciate you checking it out.
Keep making more. We're ready for it.
Thank you,
my friend. Thank you.